بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate and merciful. I think we have all erred by accepting the initial premise of the Zionists that Israel is a Jewish state. And that has defined the parameters for us, all of us. It has even defined the flow of information, because the flow of information has been defined by this category, that this is a Jewish state. And therefore, Palestinian resistance would be terrorism. Many of the criminal acts of the Zionist state are attributed to Judaism and to Jews. It has generated a great deal of confusion. And I will argue in this paper that Israel is not a Jewish state. And that once we do so, I think a lot of issues will be clarified. Hence, the idea of the origins. I will trace the origins of Zionism not to Judaism, but to main trends in modern Western civilization. The Zionist state is not Jewish for the simple reason that you cannot judge it with Jewish criteria. You cannot appeal to the moral tradition of Judaism. The same is true of the Crusaders' kingdom in Palestine. It has nothing to do with Christianity, even though they carried the cross and talked in the name of the Prophet of Peace. But one could not judge the Crusaders in terms of Christian moral values. In other words, in the case of the Zionist state and in the case of the Crusaders' kingdom, they are ultimately self-referential. They do what they do because they want to do what they want to do. And therefore, there is no appeal. And I argue that this is the essence of the secular act. The secular act is self-referential. It's physical. It denies transcendence. And if we look at the Zionist approach to Judaism, we will find that it is consistently a denial of transcendence and what I call in my discourse the immanentization of religious concepts. So take the concept of the return. The return, as the Honorable Rabbi pointed out, is something that happens at the end of days with the will of God, and the Jew has to wait patiently for God to ask him to go back, and so on and so forth. In other words, the rabbinical tradition has defined the concept of return in a highly transcendental terms. And the same is true of Zion. Zion is a transcendental concept. The insistence that it is a Zion of the heart is essential to the rabbinical tradition. Actually, I dedicated my book, The Land of Promise, published in 1977, it's out of print now, to Rabbi Yosef Becher, a lover of Zion. Because as a Muslim, I didn't have no problem at all with the love of Zion. I have no problem with the Jews who would come to Palestine to worship, to even settle as religious Jews, and so on, but to settle as colonial settlers is a different story. There we are not talking of religious experience. There we are talking of a secular attempt at usurping the land. The same is true of the concept of peoplehood. The religious concept of peoplehood is very much similar to the Islamic concept. In Islam, we also are chosen people, provided that we do good and avoid evil. In other words, it is not racial, It is not ethnic. It is not something that is inherent in us genetically. It is something we acquire through doing good and avoiding evil. And the same is true of Jewish peoplehood according to the rabbinical understanding. Hence the idea of exile. Even though the idea of exile may be contrary to some historical facts, but in religious narratives, we really don't look for material facts. We look usually for the telos thereof, the basic purpose there. So exile, according to the rabbinical tradition, is a punishment for this people that did not conform to the rules of God, and that if they do, then they will become chosen. It is not something binding. The chosenness in the Zionist discourse is something ethnic, racial, something imminent in the Jew. Hence, again, the denial of transcendence and the immanentization of Jewish concepts. Actually, this is true of the secularization of many religious concepts. I think that the Christian Zionists do exactly the same, that they immanentize the transcendental Christian concepts to make them latent, imminent in the Christian himself. And notice the shift here. The shift is from the religious system to the religious believer, from Christianity to the Christians, from Judaism to the Jews, and so on. And the same is true of some trends in Islamic fundamentalism, that it is a subtle secularized shift from Islam as a system which we appeal to, which we try to live up to, which we try to transcend our physical existence through believing in it. It is immanentized, and we become the best people because we are Muslims, which gives us absolute right in doing whatever we do, gives us absolute right to terrorize others, or in the case of Zionism, it gives us absolute right to usurp the land of Israel from its lawful owners without any possibility of appeal. Actually, I have a long thesis about modern secular civilization, that it is based basically on what I call transfer. Actually, modern Western civilization begins with the transfer of the Puritans to North America, then the transfer of black Africans to North America, then transfer keeps on duplicating itself. And one of the transfers, rhetorical transfers, achieved by the Reformation was the transfer of religious concepts from a transcendental level to a physical level, and hence you have literalist interpretations as opposed to the traditional Catholic interpretations of the Bible and of the Holy Word. Of course, I argue that transfer has duplicated itself in the concept of love, you know, that the lover is disposable, and in plastic surgery, the transfer is keeping duplicating itself over and over again in modern secular civilization, but this is a different issue altogether. Religious leaders of Judaism realized this from the very beginning, that the Zionists were secularizing the concepts by denying the transcendental aspect. And this is quite understandable, because you see, the secular experience is based on this denial of transcendence, and therefore they fail to understand it. They fail to understand, for instance, why the Orthodox rabbis stood against Zionism. I mean, they said they should have supported us because we want to return. But little did they understand that the Zion that the Orthodox rabbis believed in is different from their concept. Their Zion is something where you can buy a round-trip ticket on El Al, go, come back. But the Zion of the rabbinical tradition is a transcendental concept of the heart. Actually, I have a quotation here from Nathan Birnbaum, who coined the term Zionism incidentally. He started off as a political Zionist and gradually saw the implications thereof, and with reference to what's called Yiddish nationalism, and finally became an Orthodox Jew and realized the dangers of Zionism. Actually, he developed a very tragic view of modern Western civilization. In one of his last works, he suggested that Jews, to maintain their Jewishness, should live between states so that they can keep themselves as religious people, because he saw the rise of Nazism and fascism and totalitarianism in Soviet Russia and so on, and felt that this secular modernity is going to destroy religious belief altogether. It's a very tragic solution, but it shows certain awareness. One of the rabbis, I think it was Rabbi Schneerson, said that, you know, had he had the chance, he said, my witnesses are in heaven, that if I were to be free, I would rush as an arrow to the Holy Land. But he refuses to, because he thinks that the Zionists would utilize that, would use this as a sanction for the concept of physical return, and therefore, even though he wanted to, he refrained from going to the Holy Land. So let us now dwell on in the next 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, for a man who spent the last 30 years writing an 8-volume encyclopedia on Judaism and the Jews, it's very difficult to speak for 25 minutes, but may God help me, and I summarize some of my ideas. I think to understand Judaism, we will have to go to the sources of modern Western thought, and the first thing is the secular idea. As I argued, that it's a denial of any beyond. It's a denial of any duality in the world. There's just this world, the world of nature, and the metaphysics are immanentized. So you have a metaphysic of peoplehood, metaphysic of land, metaphysic. Jabotinsky, for instance, says, I'm building a temple for my God, and my God is the Jewish people, and so on and so forth. So the secular is the ultimate point of reference. But something else is important, that Zionism is based on a critique of so-called Jewish personality borrowed from anti-Semitic literature. The Zionists were basically assimilated Jews, Jews who hated their identity, their Judaism, their Jewishness. Actually, I argue in some of my writings that Zionism is basically a movement to rid Europe of the Jews. And Zionist narrative has hidden this aspect of Zionism. But there is a fellow with the name of Alfred Nusig, who disappeared altogether from Zionist historiography, even though he was one of the founders of Zionism, a good friend of Herzl, attended the first Zionist Congress. But he disagreed with Herzl, but he was a Jewish demographer and an artist and lived long enough for the Nazis to come to power. And because he was a Jewish, knew about Jewish demography, he prepared a plan for the extermination of Western Jewry, and collaborated with the Gestapo, and the Warsaw Ghetto rebels discovered that, Jewish revolution, and they arrested him, tried him, and executed him. It's just, of course, he's a rare personality, but nevertheless, it's a rare personality that is very indicative of something very fundamental about Zionism. Zionism issues forth from the idea of the inevitability of anti-Semitism, that all Gentiles suffer from a certain virus called anti-Semitism. When Wiseman asked Crossman, the labor leader, whether he was an anti-Semite or not, he said, "Of course I am." And Wiseman says, "Ever since, a very strong friendship grew between them." Because, I mean, this is one of the basic premises of Zionism, that it translates itself in things like the negation of the diaspora, that the diaspora has to be liquidated, that the contributions of the Jewish communities throughout history are simply deviation from an essential Jewish history that can be fulfilled only in the land of Palestine. Actually, there is a whole catalog of stereotypes used in Zionism, especially labor Zionism, which really founded Israel. Labor Zionism, if you study the early literature, you find how radical it is in its rejection of Judaism, in its rejection of so-called Jewish personality. Actually, the radicalism was such that they wanted to drop the word Jew altogether and instead use the word Hebrew and say, "We are the last Jews and the first Hebrews." Actually, the radicalism went sometimes to childish, ridiculous extremes. On the day of Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day in the Jewish religious calendar, they would go in front of the Western Wall, which is the holiest place, and they would eat a ham sandwich, which is very childish, but nevertheless, again, very symbolical of their attitude, which shows the fundamental anti-Semitism, which also characterizes, incidentally, Christian Zionism. Christian Zionism, which is another source of Zionism, is notoriously anti-Semitic. Again, the media handles that. You see, the Christian Zionist myth says the following: for final redemption, the Jews have to be restored to the promised land. And once restored, the Messiah would come and a certain war would start, where about two-thirds of the Jews will be killed and one-third will convert to Christianity. In other words, this is a genocidal myth, but somehow Israel doesn't mind that, and that's why there is friction between American Jews and the Zionist state on this score, that the American Jews know that this is a genocidal anti-Semitic myth. Anti-Semitic, but nevertheless deeply Zionist, because I argue that anti-Semitism and Zionism come out of the same hatred of rejection of Judaism and hatred of the Jews. Actually, I argue also in my writing that the Zionist idea as an idea was complete in Earl Shaftesbury's works and Lawrence Oliphant. Lawrence Oliphant was so active that he went to Palestine and founded some settler colonial enclaves for Jews. Shaftesbury outlined the whole of the Zionist idea 50 years or so before Herzl. But both of them are notorious anti-Semites. Again, their plan was to rid Europe of its Jews, to instrumentalize them, make use of them. The same is true, incidentally, of Balfour. Balfour, in his introduction to Chaim Sokolov's book, History of Zionism, admits that he is an anti-Semite and that the Jews are a burden on Western civilization. In other words, and the History of Zionism by Nahum Sokolov was the first official history of Zionism. Of course, when Zionism was first launched, the Zionist And Sacrifice of Zionism and Israel says all major Jewish organizations, and emphasis here on the word all, either opposed Zionism or at least took a non-Zionist position. In other words, this shows how alien Zionism is to the Jewish tradition. I argue in my writings that Zionism succeeded because Herzl discovered imperialism. You see, before Herzl, there were many Zionist organizations like Hebat Zion and this and that, but they were all fringe. Herzl, because he comes not from Russia, but from Germany, or the German formation from Vienna, discovered imperialism as the only agency for the implementation of any project in the 19th century. And he espoused imperialism. Because I argue also that the Zionist solution for the so-called Jewish question is the imperialist solution. The imperialist solution for the problems of Europe in the 19th century was exporting them to the East. So if you had excess commodities, you dump them in India. If you wanted raw material, you take it. Cheap labor, take it from Africa. Now, if you have human surplus, and this is the term used to refer to unemployed people. If you have human surplus, what do you do with it? You dump it in South Africa, in Algeria, or in Palestine. And the Jews were seen as a human surplus. So rather than solve the problem of this surplus through reorganization of the society, through justice, through redistribution of income, Europe solved its problems by exporting them till the mid-60s. And the Zionist solution for the Jewish question is basically the imperialist solution. Let me conclude by giving you about a theory which I developed called the functional group theory, and it is found on my website. It's www.elmessiri.com. The functional group theory is functional group is basically a group imported from outside society or recruited from within and assigned one function, basically. Function that the society, majority of society, refrains from doing for one reason or another. For instance, it might be too distinguished. It might require expertise. It might be too mean. And it might be, again, it's a religious law. And traditional society operated within functional groups. So, for instance, in Egypt, we had the Mamluks, a military functional group. In the Ottoman Empire, we had the Armenians, a financial, commercial group. Medieval Europe turned the Jew into a functional group that engaged basically in trade and money lending. And the Jew actually in medieval Europe was seen as something owned by the king. And there were charters talking of servi camerae regis, the serfs of the royal chamber, or it would say Judais Haberi or Judais Teneri, I have my Jews, I hold my Jews. Actually, so much so that when some Jews tried to escape, say, from England to France, they were arrested at the borders, being the king's chattel. They were not supposed to leave. A Jew would wake up in the morning and find the prince has donated a forest, a castle, and five Jews to his son. And that's on. This was the medieval concept of the functional group. This doesn't mean that the Jews were the only functional groups. There were some other Muslims, for instance, in Poland, were a functional group, and that's on. In Finland, I understand, there is a Turkish functional group. However, what happened is that with the rise of the nation state, with local armies, banking systems, the functional group became without a function. And this is the worst that could happen to a functional group. The Mamluks, for instance, in Egypt, when the National Army was founded by Muhammad Ali, they either assimilated completely or were decimated by the rule of Egypt. The blacks in the United States have a similar problem. They were there as slaves working in the plantations, and now they have become a functional group without a function. In Europe, the same happened to the Jewish communities, functional group basically in Eastern Europe, because in Western Europe they were already assimilated and became part of the society.
Now, can you be concluding, Professor?
Yeah, just 1 minute. So what the West did was to reproduce the concept of functional group on the level of the state. So the state of Israel is a functional state, a state that was assigned a special function, and the relationship with Europe is contractual. Usually, a member of functional group is defined in terms of function, not in terms of his total humanity. So is the state of Israel. It's a functional state. Its relationship with the West is contractual, and it is maintained, supported, as long as it serves its function. Its function, basically, now is military, and they are trying to turn it into a commercial function through integrating it in the Middle East. Thank you so much.